this opportunity that terrified her. The driver gave a curt nod. "Yeah, well, hop in. We're meeting Master Jasper and Master Cedric along the way." Master Cedric. As much as I'd enjoyed looking at him, seeing him now could most certainly create a problem in this brilliant plan I'd created. But I'd have to deal with that later. For now, I had other issues. "Hop in?" I asked, putting my hands on my hips. "Aren't you going to come down and open the door for me?" The man gave an amused snort. "Listen to you acting like a lady already. You aren't a jewel yet, missy. Now get in. We've got 2 more stops to make, and one's by the Sirminican district. I don't want to be out there any later than I have to. Those Sirminicans will rob you blind if you're not watching them." I fumbled with the coach's handle and finally figured out how to open it. Ungracefully, I half-stepped, half-tumbled into the carriage's interior, without the benefit of a stool or pillow offered by a servant. Inside, the carriage was dim, lit only by what light made its way in through the smoky windows. As my eyes adjusted, I could see that the cushioned seat I sat on was made of a burgundy velvet of middling quality. Without bothering to make sure I was comfortable, the driver set the horses on their way, causing me to jerk forward. I gripped the walls for support, staring out the darkened glass as the lights of my family's home moved farther and farther away. I held my breath as I watched the retreating house, expecting a group of servants to come tearing out at any moment, swarming the carriage until it stopped and released me. No one came, though. The house went about its nighttime duties, soon vanishing into the night. Or maybe I was the one vanishing. Maybe I would be forgotten quickly, my face and voice gone from the minds of those I'd once known. The notion made me sadder than I'd expected, and I had to shift my focus back to the plan. Presuming no one thought to check on my headache tonight, I'd have until morning before my absence was discovered, at which point I'd hopefully be long gone into the country. And that was assuming, of course, that Ada didn't get cold feet and come back. If she'd even left the city. If things were on track, she'd have already bought passage with some group of travellers heading north. There were a lot of ifs in this plan, a lot of things that could go wrong. The rocking carriage made its way through the city, into parts I'd never seen before. I was terribly curious about it all, but as the evening deepened I could see less and less by the glow of the gas lamps used to illuminate the streets. The carriage finally came to a halt, and I heard a muffled conversation. Moments later the door opened, and a girl my age stood framed in the doorway, her fiery red hair shining even in the twilight. She shot me a calculating look, and then, like me, climbed in without benefit of a stool. Only she managed it better. She shut the door, and the carriage continued on its jerky ride. We sat there, sizing each other up in silence as we moved down the cobblestone streets. Light from outside lamps came and went, creating a flickering show of shadows inside. When that intermittent illumination came, I could see that her dress was even plainer than mine, threadbare in some places. At last she spoke, her voice tinged slightly with a working-class accent. "How'd you get your hair like that? All those curls, lying just so." It wasn't a question I'd expected. It also seemed blunt, until I realized she thought we were of equal social rank. "It's naturally wavy," I said. She nodded impatiently. "Yes, yes, I can tell. But the way those curls are all arranged so perfectly. I've tried that myself, like the highborn ladies do. I think I need half a dozen hands to do it." I nearly said I had had half a dozen hands helping me, and then bit off the words. I'd thought I was so clever changing into Ada's dress, but had gone off on this adventure with the same elaborately styled hair I'd had from this morning, which my maids had helped curl and pin in the latest fashion, cascading all around my shoulders. I gave my companion a tight smile back. "Someone help me," I said. I thought about Ada's backstory and tried to make it my own. "Since it's a special occasion. I worked as a lady's maid, you see, so I have friends who are really good at this kind of thing." "A lady's maid? Well, that's bloody lucky. I wouldn't want to leave that post. Explains why you talk so well. You'll have a leg up on the rest of us." She sounded impressed, and also a little envious. "It's not a competition," I said quickly. There was another fleeting flash of light from outside, showing me a wry expression on her face. "The hell it isn't. How we do and how well we learn affects who they offer us to as wives. I'm going to be a banker's wife, or a statesman's, not some farmer's. She paused to reconsider. Unless he's some dirty rich plantation owner, where I can order around the servants and the household. But an ordinary farm wife? Sweeping floors and making cheese? No thanks. Not that any old farmer could afford one of us. My mother heard from one of her friends that the glittering court got a marriage price of 400 gold dollars for one of their girls. Can you even imagine that sort of money? Vaguely, I recalled Cedric talking about suitors making offers. The contract had further elaborated how the glittering court's agents made a commission off each girl's marriage price. Cedric might have spoken in lofty tones about his new nobility providing a service to the new world, but it was obvious this was a huge money-making venture for the Thorne family. The other girl was regarding me strangely, waiting for a response. I'm sorry. You'll have to forgive me if I sound scattered. This was all kind of last minute, I explained. The family I worked for was dismissing most of their staff, and so when Master Cedric was looking for girls, someone referred me to him. Oh, you're one of his, huh? I heard about that too, my companion said. He hasn't ever recruited before, you see. His father's one of the best procurers, and Master Cedric made a big deal about how he could be just as good, so his father let him pick a couple of girls. Caused a big family stir. You sure do know a lot, I said. She'd apparently received a more extensive pitch than Ada and me. I was delivering laundry to their house, she explained. My mother washes clothes, and I helped her, but no more. She held up her hands and studied them, but I couldn't get a good look. I'm not meant to be a laundress. I'm never washing anyone's damn clothes again. Her ambition radiated off her. I wasn't sure if that sort of initiative would be useful to me or not, but when in doubt, I found friendliness was usually the best course of action. I'm Adelaide, I told her warmly. It's so nice to meet you, Miss... She hesitated, as though deciding if I was worth the next piece of information. Right. Tamsin, right. The carriage began to slow, bringing us to our next stop. Both of us dropped the thread of our conversation as we waited to see who would enter next. When the door opened and revealed a girl standing outside, Tamsin's breath caught. At first I thought the poor lighting was distorting the newcomer's appearance. Then I realized the tawny hue of her skin was natural. It was almost like caramel. I recalled the driver saying we were going near the Seminican Quarter. It was one of the poorest districts in the capital, and I could just make out a few dirty, run-down buildings in the distance. I knew by reputation that it was overcrowded with refugees from Seminica, which had been locked in civil war for the last few years. Once it had been a great nation, and its monarchy had even intermarried with ours. Rebels had recently overthrown the royal family, and now the country was generally avoided as a chaotic war zone. This girl, waiting by the coach's door with her lovely skin and luxurious black hair, bore all the signs of being one of those refugees. She was also stunningly, breathtakingly beautiful. The driver had hopped down to admit her, giving her a wary look as she stepped forward. She carried herself with dignity, and after glancing between Tamsin and me, settled in on my side of the carriage. Her dress was even more worn than Tamsin's, but a shawl around her shoulders, stitched with intricate embroidery, was exceptional. Recalling his slurs, I wondered if the driver had come down to ensure she didn't rob us blind. When he continued waiting by the open door, I realized more was happening. Soon, two male voices carried to my ears, one of which I recognized.
"Pretty enough, I suppose, but you have no idea how hard it's going to be to sell a Seminican. That's not going to matter. Not over there." "You don't know over there like I do," came the biting reply. "You just threw away your commission." "That's not..." The words were abruptly cut off when the two speakers reached the carriage's doorway. One of them, an older man in his 40s, had only the faintest touch of silver in his brown hair. There was a dashing look about him, and he bore enough resemblance to Cedric Thorne to make me realize this must be his father, Jasper. The other man joining us was, of course, Cedric Thorne himself. My mouth went dry as our gazes locked. Even while being chastised by his father, Cedric had swaggered up to the carriage with that same self-assured ease I'd seen previously. Now he came to an abrupt halt, so suddenly that he nearly tripped over his own feet. He stared at me like I was an apparition.
his mouth open to speak and then shut abruptly as though, perhaps, he didn't trust himself. Jasper beamed when he saw Tamsin, oblivious to the silent drama occurring between Cedric and me. "So lovely to see you again, my dear. I trust your pickup was fine." Tamsin's earlier calculation and wariness vanished as she returned his smile. "Oh, everything's been lovely, Mr. Thorne. The carriage is beautiful, and I've already made a new friend." His eyes fell on me, and I had to drag myself away from Cedric's pinning gaze. I noticed that Jasper, at least, regarded me with approval. "And you must be our other lovely companion, Ada, right?" Jasper extended his hand to me, and after several awkward moments, I realized he expected me to shake it. I did, hoping my unfamiliarity with the gesture didn't show. "You, I have no doubt, will have men beating down our door in Adoria." I wet my lips, having difficulty finding my voice. "Thank you, sir. And you can call me Adelaide." Somehow that comment seemed to snap Cedric out of his daze. "Oh, is that what you're calling yourself now?"
"It's an improvement," I said pointedly. "Don't you think?"
When Cedric didn't answer, Jasper nudged him. "Stop delaying. We need to get going." Cedric studied me a bit more, and I felt as though we both stood on a precipice. He was the one who determined which way we tipped. "Yes," he said at last. "Let's go." Jasper entered ahead of him, sitting beside Tamsin and taking up most of the seat on that side. Obligingly, the Seminican girl scooted over on our side, creating extra space. Recognizing the cue, I moved as well. After a slight hesitation, Cedric sat down beside me. It still made for close quarters, and our arms and legs touched. My grandmother would have been scandalized. He barely moved, and I could feel that his body was as rigid as my own, both of us tense as we came to terms with this new situation. Most of the subsequent conversation was carried by Jasper and Tamsin. I learned the Seminican girl was called Mira, but she said as little as Cedric and I did. I commented once on the beauty of her shawl, and she drew it closer. "It was my mother's," she said softly, her words laced with a Seminican accent. There was a sadness in her voice I understood, one that stirred up an ache in my chest that had never entirely gone away. Without knowing anything else about her, I instantly felt a connection and asked her no more. When the carriage came to a full stop after about 20 minutes, Jasper looked up with satisfaction. "Finally, the gates. Once we're outside the city, we can get some real speed." We could hear agitated voices on the other side of the carriage door, and as the delay increased, Jasper's expression grew annoyed. "What's taking so long?" He opened the door and leaned out, calling to the driver. The driver hurried to the door, two gate guards behind him. "Sorry, Mr. Thorne, they're checking everyone leaving, looking for some girl." "Not some girl," corrected one of the guards harshly. "A young noblewoman, 17 years old, a countess." I stopped breathing. "Who are these girls?" demanded the other guard, peering inside. Jasper relaxed. "Certainly not countesses. We're with the glittering court. These are common girls, bound for Adoria." The guard was suspicious, studying each of us in turn. I wished again I'd thought to change my hair. "What's this girl look like?" asked Jasper conversationally. "Brown hair and blue eyes," said one of the guards, his gaze lingering fractionally longer on me. "Same age as this lot. Ran away earlier this evening. There's a reward." I almost felt indignant, since I like to think my hair was more of a golden brown, but it was a common enough description that it could apply to half the girls in the city. The vaguer, the better. "Well, we've got a Seminican, a laundress, and a housemaid," said Jasper. "If the reward's big enough and you want to pass one of them off as a countess, be my guest. But I assure you, we've seen where they come from. Hardly posh conditions. Although, Cedric, weren't you in some noble's house today? Isn't that where you got Adelaide? Did you hear anything?" The first guard's gaze locked onto Cedric. "Sir, where were you?" Cedric had been staring straight ahead this whole time, perhaps hoping a lack of eye contact would render him invisible. "Sir?" prompted the guard. The world seemed to move in slow motion, and all I could hear for several moments was the hammering of my own heart. I was reminded of that precipice again, only now I was losing my footing. All it would take was one word from Cedric, one word to get me hauled back to my grandmother and Lionel. I didn't doubt Cedric was clever enough to spin the situation to make himself sound innocent, and for all I knew, Cedric might think collecting a reward now was easier than earning a commission in Adoria. Cedric took a deep breath, and as if putting on a mask, he became the swaggering young man from before. "I saw Lord John Branson," he said. He nodded toward me. "She was mending some fine lady's clothes at his house when I retrieved her, though. Does that count?" "This is hardly a joking matter," snapped the guard. But I could tell he was already losing interest in us, ready to move on. There were probably a lot of travellers trying to leave before curfew, and they didn't want to be delayed by one unlikely carriage. A runaway noblewoman would be skulking out, not sitting with reputable businessmen. "You can go," said the other guard. "Thank you for your time." Cedric, still putting on a good face, smiled back. "Not a problem. I hope you find her." The door closed, and the carriage started forward, finally moving at a steady pace now that we'd cleared the stops and starts of the city. I exhaled, all the tension melting out of me as I sank into the seat. I dared a brief glance at Cedric, but couldn't read his expression or intentions. All I could hope was that maybe, finally, I'd be free. Chapter 4. The journey took all night, and I drifted in and out of sleep. My body wanted rest, but my mind was too keyed up, fearful I'd hear horses and angry shouts behind us. But the night passed uneventfully, the rocking of the carriage lulling me into more of a calm daze than a true sleep. I came fully awake when I heard Jasper say, "Ah, here we are!" The carriage's steady gait began to slow, and I lifted my head, startled and embarrassed to realize I'd been resting it on Cedric's shoulder. His cologne smelled like vetiver. My companion's reactions were mixed. Tamsin's face was eager, ready to take on this new adventure and seize what she saw as her destiny. Mira was more apprehensive, wearing the expression of one who had seen much and knew better than to trust initial appearances. Jasper helped each of us out of the carriage, and as I waited my turn, I had a momentary flash of panic at what I might find. I'd gone to a great deal of trouble last night, striving for a destination grounded more in my own fantasies than any fact. Cedric had wooed me with his pitch to Ada, but there was a very real chance I was about to walk into a situation far worse than a life of barley with Lionel. I could be walking into a life of sordidness and danger. Jasper took my hand, and I got my first good look at Blue Spring Manor. To my immediate relief, it looked neither sordid nor dangerous on the outside. Blue Spring Manor was a country estate, set out among the moors, with no village or other community in sight. No one searching for me would casually pass by. It wasn't quite as big as some of my family's former holdings, but it was still old and impressive. The morning sun rose just beyond its roof, illuminating Tamsin and Mira's awestruck faces. A middle-aged woman dressed all in black met us at the door. "Well, here they are, the last of them. I was worried they weren't going to show." "We had a few delays," Jasper explained, glancing at Mira, "and some surprises." "I'm sure they'll settle in soon enough." The woman turned to us with a stern expression. "I'm Mistress Masterson. I run the house, and will manage your day-to-day affairs. I'll also be in charge of teaching you etiquette, which I expect you to excel in. We've got one room left that'll hold the three of you nicely. You can put your things away, and then join the other girls for breakfast. They've just sat down." She asked the Thorns if they wanted breakfast as well, but I barely heard their response. I was too busy processing Mistress Masterson's comment about the three of us sharing a room. I'd never shared a room with anyone in my life. No, I'd never shared my rooms with anyone. No matter which residence my family had stayed in, I'd had a suite to myself. At most, I'd had a maid sleeping outside the door, or in an antechamber to answer my summons. Cedric gave me a sharp look, and I wondered if perhaps my astonishment showed on my face. I quickly schooled my expression to neutrality, and followed Mistress Masterson inside. She led us up a winding staircase that I had to admit was elegant. Bright paintings lined the house's walls, some portraits of Thorn family members, and others hung simply for their beauty. I recognized a few of the artists, and nearly slowed to study them in more detail before remembering I needed to keep up. The room Mistress Masterson took us to was decently appointed, with lacy curtains framing a window that looked down on the manor's grounds. The room also held 3 clawfoot beds with matching dresses, but didn't seem nearly big enough for any of that, let alone 3 occupants. Tamsin and Mira's wide eyes suggested otherwise.
"It's so bloody big!" exclaimed Tamsin.
"Language, please." Mistress Masterson's prim face softened a little as she looked us over. "You'll soon get used to it, and if you're lucky and study hard, you'll likely have a room this size all to yourself when you marry in the New World." Mira ran her fingertips lightly along the flowered wallpaper. "I've never seen anything like this."
Mistress Masterson swelled with pride. "Nearly all of our rooms are wallpapered. We try to maintain high standards, just as good as the capitals. Now then, let me take you down to the other girls. You can get acquainted with them while I speak with Master Jasper and his son."
We left our meager belongings in the room and followed her back down the staircase. The rest of the manor's corridors bore the same decor, with old portraits and elegant vases scattered about. We entered the dining room, also beautifully done, sporting striped wallpaper and deep green rugs. The table was covered with a scallop-edged linen cloth and set with china and silver. Tamsin had attempted an unimpressed expression when we walked into the room, but faltered at the sight of it. I immediately focused my attention on the table's occupants, consisting of 7 girls who fell silent at our arrival. They looked to be the same age as us and were all very attractive. The glittering court might claim to find girls who could learn to behave like nobler classes, but it was clear our appearances were a big part of the criteria that got us here.
"Ladies," said Mistress Masterson, "this is Tamsin, Adelaide, and Mirabel. They will be joining our home."
To us, she added, "Everyone else has just arrived within the last week. Now that you're all here, we'll formalize the schedule and, of course, work on overhauling everyone's wardrobes. You'll dress better than you ever have in your lives and learn to style yourselves as befits the upper classes."
She paused and looked me over. "Though your hair is already quite nice, Adelaide."
She urged us to sit down and then left to speak with Jasper and Cedric. Silence continued as everyone sized each other up, or continued eating. I was surprisingly hungry, and wondered when a servant would enter. After a few minutes, I realized no one was coming, and that we had to do our own serving. I reached out to a nearby teapot, and had the novel experience of pouring for myself. Breakfast was a selection of fruit and delicate pastries. Tamsin's calculation and Mira's apprehension couldn't hold out against an array like that, and they reached eagerly for the serving plate. I wondered if they'd ever eaten such things in their lives. Both were thin. Maybe they'd never eaten much of anything. I purposely selected a fig and almond tart, something that required a little effort. It was traditionally eaten by being first cut into small, equally sized pieces, and I used the delay as an excuse to study my companions. The first thing I noticed was a uniformity in their clothing. Sure, the dresses varied in color and fabric choices, but my guess was that they'd all gone through the outfitting process Mistress Masterson had spoken about. The dresses were pretty and flirty, as opposed to the more serviceable one I'd inherited from Ada. The fabric quality in mine was at least as good, however, if not better. Mira and Tamsin's attire didn't even warrant comparison to the rest of us, though I had to assume most of the girls had arrived in a similar state. The others also appeared to have had a few rudimentary etiquette lessons already, which they were trying to implement, with varying degrees of success. They might be dressed and styled decently, but these were the daughters of labourers and tradesmen. A couple of girls managed the 10-piece silverware setting reasonably well. Others made no effort whatsoever and ate largely with their hands. Most fell in the middle, visibly struggling to figure out which utensil to use, no doubt trying to recall whatever Mistress Masterson had taught them in their brief time here. Tamsin, I suddenly noticed, was eating a fig and almond tart, too. Unlike other girls who were simply lifting and biting it, Tamsin cut hers perfectly, with exactly the right tools. Then I realized her eyes were locked on my plate, imitating everything I did.
"What are you?"
one girl asked boldly.
"Mirakosi? Venetian? Surely not Siminican?"
There was no question about whom she was speaking to, and all eyes swiveled to Mira. She took several moments to look up. She'd been nicely cutting her lemon roll, but was using the wrong fork and knife. No one else knew any better, and I certainly wasn't going to point it out.
"I was born in the City of Holy Light, yes."
Santa Luz, the grandest, oldest city in Siminica. I'd learned about it in my governess's history lessons, how it had been settled by the ancient Reuvens centuries ago. Philosophers and kings had lived and ruled there, and its monuments were legendary. At least they had been until revolution ravaged the country. A girl at the opposite end of the table regarded Mira with undisguised derision.
"There's no way you can get rid of that accent in a year."
She glanced around knowingly at some of the others. "I'm sure they need servants in the New World. You won't need to talk much if you're busy scrubbing floors." This brought a few snickers from some, uncomfortable looks from others.
"Clara,"
warned one girl uneasily. I carefully set down my fork and knife, crossing them in a perfect X, as a lady did when pausing in her meal. Fixing a level gaze on the girl, Clara, sitting at the end of the table, I asked,
"Who did your makeup today?"
Startled by my question, she turned from smirking at her neighbor to study me curiously.
"I did."
I nodded in satisfaction.
"Obviously."
Clara frowned.
"Obviously.
Well, I knew it couldn't have been Mistress Masterson." A girl beside me hesitantly offered,
"We haven't been here long. Cosmetics haven't been part of the curriculum,
I said, helping her with the unfamiliar word. I glanced back at Clara before returning to my tart. "Obviously it hasn't."
"Why do you keep saying that?"
she demanded. I drew out the tension by eating another piece before answering.
"Because Mistress Masterson would have never directed you to use cosmetics like that. Red lips aren't in style in Austria anymore. All the highborn ladies are wearing coral and dusky pink. And you've applied the rouge in the wrong spot. It goes higher, up on your cheekbones."
That's what I'd heard, at least. I'd certainly never applied my own cosmetics.
"Where you've got it right now makes you look like you have mumps. You've got a steady hand on the coal, but everyone knows you have to smudge it to get the proper look. Otherwise your eyes look beady, and everything you've applied is far too dark. A light touch goes a long way. The way you're wearing it now makes you look, how shall I put it? Well, like a lady of questionable morals."
Two spots of colour appeared in the girl's cheeks, making her badly applied rouge look even worse.
"Like what?"
"Like a prostitute. That's another word for whore, in case you're not familiar with it," I explained, using as formal a tone as my former governess would use while teaching Reuven grammar.
"That's someone who sells her body for..."
"I know what it means," the girl exclaimed, turning even redder. "But," I added, "if it's any consolation, you look like a very high-class one. Like one who would work in one of the more expensive brothels, where the girls dance and sing. Not like the ones who work down by the wharves. Those poor things don't have access to true cosmetics at all, so they have to make do with whatever they can scrape together. Be grateful you haven't hit that low." I paused.
"Oh, and, by the way, you're using the wrong fork."
The girl stared at me open-mouthed, and I braced myself for a backlash. It'd be no more than I deserved, but she'd certainly deserved my belittling. I didn't know Mira well, but something about her resonated with me, a mix of sorrow shielded by pride. Clara had the air of someone who preyed on others frequently. I knew that type of girl. They apparently existed in both upper and lower classes, so I felt no remorse for what I'd done. Until her eyes, and those of everyone else at the table, lifted to something beyond me. A cold feeling welled up in the pit of my stomach, and I slowly turned around, unsurprised to see Mistress Masterson and the Thorns standing in the entryway to the dining room. I wasn't sure how much they'd heard, but their shocked expressions told me they'd heard enough. No one acknowledged it, however, as Cedric and Jasper joined us at the table. Really, no one acknowledged much of anything as the meal progressed. I wanted to shrink into my seat, but remembered a lady must always sit straight. The tension had been thick before, but now I could feel it pressing upon my shoulders. I regretted finishing the tart, because then I had nothing to occupy myself or fix my gaze upon. I poured another cup of tea, stirring it endlessly until the thorns rose to leave, and Mistress Masterson formally dismissed us to our rooms. I was one of the first to hurry out, hoping if I escaped Mistress Masterson's eyes she'd eventually forget about the scene she'd witnessed. Surely she had better things to worry about. The other girls turned toward the spiral staircase, but just as I was about to, a flash of color caught my eye at the opposite end of the foyer. Everyone was preoccupied going their own way and paid little attention when I turned from the stairs. At the far end of the great hall was the entrance to the drawing room, and beside it hung a painting of surpassing beauty. I recognized the artist as I drew nearer. Florencio. The National Gallery in Osfro also held one of his paintings, and I'd studied it many times. He was a Dominican, renowned for painting landscapes in his own country, and I was surprised to find one of his works in this country manner. Closer scrutiny made me think it was one of the artist's earlier works. Certain techniques weren't quite as refined as the gallery portrait. It was still exquisite, but those imprecise details might explain how the painting had ended up here. I admired it a little longer, trying to puzzle out some of his methods, and then turned around to go back to the staircase. To my astonishment, I saw Jasper and Cedric headed my way down the corridor. Neither had noticed me yet. They were too engrossed in their own conversation. I quickly stepped around a corner, cringing back into a small nook to the side of the drawing room's entrance that was out of sight of the main hall. "Knew it was too good to be true," Jasper was saying. "You had two chances. Two chances, and you blew them both."
"You don't think you're being a little extreme?" asked Cedric. His tone was light, laconic even, but I could sense the tension underneath it.
"Did you hear the mouth on that girl?" Jasper exclaimed. "Atrocious!"
"Not really. She was quite polite about it all. No improper language," Cedric hesitated. "And her grammar and diction are quite excellent."
"It's not the language so much as the attitude. She's bold and impertinent. The men in Adoria don't want shrews for wives, they want mild, compliant young women."
"Not too mild if they're going to survive in Adoria," Cedric said. "And she was defending Mira. I thought it was noble."
Well, that answered one question. They'd heard the whole exchange after all. Jasper sighed. "Oh, yes, defending the Dominican. That justifies it all. That one's going to have to get used to being put down. Clara's not going to be the only one to do it."
"I don't think Mira's the type who will ever get used to being put down," said Cedric. I thought about the dark glitter of her eyes and was inclined to agree with him.
"Be that as it may, you've thrown away both commissions. You'll be lucky to get anything for them in Adoria, unless you can get Adelaide to close her mouth long enough for us to marry her off. She's pretty enough to snare some fool. The Dominican is too," Jasper added almost grudgingly. "There's nothing wrong with your eyes, I'll give you that. It's the rest of you I don't know about. Letting you procure this year was a bad idea. You should have stayed here with your classes. Maybe a few more years would have taught you some sense."
"What's done is done," said Cedric.
"I suppose so. Well, I have to finish up some paperwork, and then I'll meet you at the carriage. We need to check on Swan Ridge."
I heard the sounds of Jasper's footsteps departing, and waited for Cedric to do the same. Instead, he moved forward, coming into my view as he looked at the same painting I'd admired before. I froze where I was, praying he wouldn't look off to his side. After several moments he sighed and turned to follow his father, and as he did, he caught sight of me in his periphery. Before I could draw another breath, he darted into my little alcove, trapping me between him and the wall.
"You! What in Oziel's name have you done?" he hissed, pitching his voice low. "What are you doing here?"
Getting ready to be part of the new nobility."
"I'm serious. Where's Ada?" he demanded.
"Long gone," I said with a shrug. "Guess you're stuck with me. Besides, I thought you wanted to see me again."
"When I said that, I meant that I wanted..."
He stopped that thought, looking only briefly flustered as countless unvoiced possibilities lingered tantalizingly in the air between us. His composure was back in moments. "My lady, this isn't a game. You have no business here. I was supposed to get Ada. And I'm telling you, she's long gone. I gave her some money and sent her on her way. She'll be happily milking cows in no time." My words were bold, impertinent, as Jasper would no doubt say, but inside I was panicked. Cedric had covered for me in Osfro, but this wasn't over yet. "I helped you by coming here. Ada would have probably bolted on her own. Wouldn't you have gotten in trouble for showing up short a girl? Do you know how much trouble I'll get in for smuggling away a countess? They'll imprison me, presuming your husband-to-be doesn't just kill me himself." Seeing my surprise, he said, "Yes, I know about your engagement, my lady. I read the society papers." "Then you should know you're in no real danger from Lionel. He's not the violent type, unless you're an itch. Do you think my future's a joke? Is all of this a joke to you?" I met his gaze, looking unblinkingly into those grey-blue eyes. "Actually, this is anything but a joke. This is my future, too. My chance to be free and make my own choices." He shook his head. "You don't realize what you've done. What you may have cost me. I have so much depending on this. More than you can know. I haven't cost you anything. Help me with this. Don't betray me, and I'll owe you a favor." I caught hold of his sleeve. "Haven't you ever known something in your heart? Known you needed to do something or be somewhere? That's how this is for me. I need to do this. Help me, and I swear I'll make it up to you someday." A fleeting smile played over his lips. "The Countess of Rothford could have done a lot more for me than a simple girl bound for Adoria." "You'd be surprised. The Countess of Rothford couldn't do much for herself, let alone anyone else." I looked up at him through my lashes. "And don't assume I'm simple." He made no response and instead studied me for a long time. We were in very close quarters, which gave that scrutiny a disconcertingly intimate feel. "This will be harder than you think," he said at last. "I doubt it," I said, putting my hands on my hips. "All those things you're teaching the other girls? I already know them. I could teach classes in this place." "Yes, that's exactly the problem. You know too much. Your manners, your diction, even your hair." "I wish everyone would stop talking about my hair," I muttered. "You stand out, my lady. This is a world you don't understand, where you can't wield the privilege you've known, where your title won't get you access, or even let you be taken seriously in some places. And there are plenty of things the other girls know that you don't. Can you start a fire in the hearth? Can you even dress yourself?" "I put this on myself," I told him. "I mean, the buttons took a little figuring out, but I eventually did it." He looked like he was on the verge of rolling his eyes. "My lady, you have no idea what—" "Adelaide," I corrected. "If we're going to pull this off, you must call me that. No more titles." "Well then, Adelaide, let me give you some advice. Don't be too good at anything. You don't want to attract extra attention. Think twice before you correct someone, even if it's Clara." His tone as he said her name made me think he hadn't actually minded my putting her in her place. "And above all, watch the other girls. Watch their mannerisms, listen to the way they talk. Every little detail. One slip, and both our lives will be ruined. You'll give yourself away in ways you don't even realize." At those words, I had a sudden flash of how I'd already messed up in the last 24 hours. The carriage door, the tart, the cosmetics lecture, and yes, the hair. "You'll give yourself away in ways you don't even realize." "I won't," I said fiercely. "I'll do this, you'll see. I'll do all the right things. I'll get a dozen Adorian offers and land you the biggest commission of them all." "No, don't stand out." He paused, and a hint of that earlier flirty smile resurfaced. "Well, as much as you can help it." "You said you've got a lot depending on this. What is there? More than the commission?" He grew sober again. "Nothing for you to worry about. Just get to Adori without being discovered, and we both might survive this. He glanced around. We need to go. We're going to be missed. I thought about the harsh way Jasper had spoken to him, the way he'd dismissed Cedric's efforts. A wise part of me knew better than to comment on that. Instead, I asked, "Any other words of wisdom before you leave?" He turned back, looking me over in that way that felt oddly personal. But it didn't unsettle me as much this time. Neither did our proximity. "Yes," he said. He reached forward and wound one of my curls around his fingers, inadvertently brushing my cheek in the process. "Do something about this hair. Mess it up, tie it back. Anything to make you a little more disheveled and less like you're being presented at court." I lifted my chin. "First, this isn't a court style, which you'd know if you'd spent any time with the old nobility. And second, I can mess up as many etiquette lessons as you like, but disheveled? I don't know if I can do that." The smile returned, warmer and wider than before. "Somehow I'm not surprised." He sketched me a bow, almost a caricature of the one he'd given at our first meeting. "Until next time, my Adelaide." He turned, and after a quick check around the corner, walked back down the great hall. I waited an appropriate amount of time and did the same. I'd hoped to catch a glimpse of him, but he was already out of sight. It was just as well. Putting him from my mind, I climbed the staircase up to my new life in the glittering court. Chapter 5. I returned to my room, not entirely sure what to expect. I was still shaking from the encounter with Cedric, how close I'd been to everything falling apart around me. Taking a deep breath, I threw my shoulders back and pushed the door open. Calm and silence met me. My two roommates were each sitting on their respective beds. Mira's knees were drawn up to her, creating a makeshift desk as she read a battered book. Tamsin sat cross-legged, furiously writing what looked like a letter. Seeing me, she quickly folded the paper up. I didn't know if it was coincidence or not, but the beds they'd chosen were opposite each other in the room. "I hope you don't mind the bed by the window," Mira said. Tamsin was worried it'd be bad for her complexion. Tamsin lightly touched her cheek. "You have no idea what sunlight can do to freckles. But that doesn't matter right now. What happened downstairs? They didn't kick you out, did they?" I sat down on the edge of the bed between theirs, the one that agitated freckles. Not yet. I nearly said that Mistress Masterson hadn't chastised me at all, but then thought better of it. Lest I have to explain what I'd really been doing. Just a stern talking to. "Well, you're lucky," said Tamsin. "But this kind of changes everything. I'm not sure what to do about you now." It took me a moment to follow. "Are you chastising me too?" "No. I mean, yes. I don't know. But I'm not sure if being associated with two troublemakers is going to help me around here." Mira looked startled. "What did I do?" "Nothing yet." Tamsin almost seemed chagrined. "But you saw how it was down there after just 5 minutes. People like Clara aren't going to let up on you." "So you want to be associated with someone like Clara?" I asked. "Hell no. But I've got to plan my strategy here. I can't fail." There was the slightest tremor in her voice at that last part. Vulnerability more than arrogance. Mira caught it too. "You won't fail," she said kindly. "Just keep up with everything. Cedric said as long as we score in a passing range, we're guaranteed to go to Adoria." Her use of his first name, with no honorific, wasn't lost on me. "I have to do more than just pass." Tamsin glanced down at the folded paper in her hands, and then looked up with renewed determination. Her other fist clenched beside her. "I have to be the best. The best in our manor, the best in all the other manors. And I have to do whatever it takes to make the best marriage in Adoria. The wealthiest man I can find, one who'll do anything for me. If that means being cutthroat here, so be it. Who needs cutthroat when you've got me? If you want to be on top, then I'm your best bet. I already know half of all this from being in a grand lady's house. Stick with me, and you're guaranteed to succeed. Stick with both of us," I added with a glance at Mira. I still knew nothing about her, but that sense of connection remained. I didn't know much about Tamsin either, aside from her willingness to become cutthroat, which didn't exactly come as a surprise after our brief acquaintance. But Cedric's words were weighing on me, about how important it was that I not screw up and give myself away. I was more likely to pull that off if I had backup. Were these two the best backup I might have chosen? Unclear. But as my roommates for the next year, they were the best candidates. "You're probably not the only one thinking this place is cutthroat," I continued. My persuasive skills hadn't exactly been top-notch recently, but after winning Cedric to my side, I was starting to feel confident again. "So you know the others are going to be ruthless, especially if you are the best." "There's no if," said Tamsin. "Right. Well then, someone like Clara's going to target you for sure. And you know she'll surround herself in cronies too. She'll have eyes and ears everywhere. You'd better have them too. Who knows if she'll stoop to sabotage? And you might think I'm a troublemaker, but I'm also a troublemaker who knows the difference between sec, demi-sec, and du wine."
"Demi-what?" asked Tamsin.
I crossed my arms over my chest, triumphant.
"Exactly.
So you've got the insider information. I'm obviously the leader." Tamsin's eyes fell on Mira. "What do you have to offer?" When Mira simply met her gaze unblinkingly, I supplied, "Well, she apparently survived a war zone. I somehow doubt this is going to be harder." Tamsin looked as though she was trying to decide about that. Before the conversation could continue, a knock sounded at the door. Mistress Masterson entered with clothing slung over one arm.
"Here are some day dresses for you to wear today. We can make adjustments later. Put them on, wash your faces, and be downstairs in 15 minutes.
Her eyes fell on me.
"And Adelaide, I expect there will be no more outbursts from you of such a candid nature. The Thorns employ me to make you into exemplary young ladies. I don't need that undermined within your first hour."
"Yes, of course." She looked at me expectantly, and I added, "Ma'am." When that still didn't lift her gaze, I tried, "I'm sorry." I had rarely had to apologize in my position, and wasn't entirely sure of the process. Looking exasperated, Mistress Masterson draped the dresses and chemises over a chair.
"Please just think before you speak next time."
That I understood. It was advice my grandmother had been giving me for years. When Mistress Masterson was gone, Tamsin pounced on the dresses and began examining each one. Mira, however, studied me.
"I thought you said she already scolded you."
I put on a wry smile. I guess she wanted to make sure I got the message. Or embarrass me in front of you. A groan from Tamsin drew our attention elsewhere.
"Damn it, this is too long!"
She was holding a cream-colored dress scattered with green flowers up to her. I got up and sifted through the rest of the clothes. "Wear this one. It's shorter." Tamsin gave the russet calico a dismissive look.
"That's not my color. I'd think any sort of proper lady's maid would know orange doesn't go with red hair.
I know that wearing a dress that doesn't fit you will look a lot worse. Sloppy, even." Tamsin wavered a moment and then snatched the dress from me, tossing back the green in return. It was too long for me, too, and I handed it to Mira, the tallest of us. That left me with a grey-striped dress of lightweight wool. As the others began to undress, I backed up, suddenly feeling self-conscious. It was silly, I supposed, considering I'd had people dressing me my entire life. But that had been utilitarian. It was my servant's job. Changing clothes now, with others around, was a reminder of the new lack of privacy I had. The room suddenly felt small, like it was closing in around me. I turned my back to them, and began working through all those buttons that had given me such trouble before. It was slightly easier than initially fastening them up, but the loops they went through were sewn under the edge of the fabric, requiring some dexterity. And good grief, why did there have to be so many of them? When I finally made it to the bottom of the dress, I glanced behind me and saw Tamsin and Mira staring in astonishment. Both were already in their new chemises and dresses.
"Our best bet, huh?" asked Tamsin.
"It's harder than it looks," I retorted. "A new style. One I'm not used to." I turned away from them again, and at least managed to wriggle out of it in a timelier manner than the unbuttoning. Ada's chemise was of better quality than this new one, but I removed it too, and put on the whole ensemble. "Are these dresses torn?" asked Mira, studying one of her sleeves. It was clear neither girl had ever worn a chemise as anything other than a basic undergarment. In fact, I was pretty sure Mira hadn't had one on at all. These new dresses were the same style of many I'd worn before, albeit mine had been more expensive materials, where the chemise was meant to be displayed as part of the dress. I knew how it was supposed to look, but wasn't entirely sure of how to implement it. I did my best to explain it, and after a fair amount of tugging and straightening, we all finally managed to look fashionable. The delicate white fabric of my chemise was pulled and puffed out through slashes in the overdress's arms, creating a color contrast. Lace from the chemise's neckline peeped out around my bodice. All of our extra maneuvering had taken time, and we were the last ones to arrive downstairs. We weren't exactly late, but Mistress Masterson's sharp eyes told us we shouldn't have cut it so close. Then, taking in our appearance, her expression turned approving. "You three have styled those chemises very nicely. I've been trying to teach the others all week, but they just keep bunching up the fabric." I gave Mistress Masterson my sweetest smile. "Thank you, ma'am. We're happy to help the other girls if they keep having trouble. I see Clara's is really bunched up in the back. I can help her out after today's lessons." Clara shot me a murderous look, and I noticed much of her makeup had been scrubbed. "That's very kind of you," said Mistress Masterson. "And such a refreshing attitude. Most girls come here being so cutthroat. Mira, is there something wrong?" Mira had a hand to her mouth, trying to cover her laugh.
"No, ma'am. Just a cough."
Mistress Masterson gave her a wary glance and then beckoned for us all to follow her to the conservatory. Mira and Tamsin fell into step with me, one on either side.
"That was excessive," said Tamsin, but she too was smiling, and this time there was no show or calculation.
I smiled back.
Best bet.
And so my life as a commoner began, the days flying by faster than I expected. Cedric didn't need to worry about my hair giving me away. I'd never styled it on my own in my life. And after its first washing at Blue Spring, there was no way I could have ever replicated what I'd come in with that first day. No one demanded that level of detail on a regular basis, and mostly we were expected to pull our hair back neatly into buns or braids. I wasn't very good at that, either. Disheveled became part of my daily life. And Cedric was right about the other things. Although we were being trained to fit into the upper classes, freeing the girls from many of the labors they'd grown up with, there were still a lot of skills taken for granted that I couldn't perform. I did what he'd advised, watching the other girls avidly and imitating them as best as I could. I succeeded with varying degrees of luck.
"Don't mix it!"
Tamsin exclaimed. She darted across the kitchen, jerking a spoon from my hand. It was a month into our stay at Blue Spring, and we'd fallen into a regular routine of classes and activities. I pointed at the open cookbook on the counter.
"It says to break the butter into the flour."
"That's not the same as mixing.
This thing'll be as dense as some tosser's skull."
I shrugged, not understanding, and she nudged me aside to take over. Culinary skills weren't something I'd expected to learn here. The hope was that most of us would have servants, or at least a house cook to prepare meals in Adoria. But the mistress of a large household was still expected to oversee what was being cooked, and that meant instructing us in the preparation of finer food. The dishes we made here were beyond what most of the girls had ever dined on, but a lot of the basic principles were still familiar to my housemates. Me? I'd never cooked a thing. Nor had I had to supervise anything. I'd had servants to supervise my other servants. I watched as Tamsin deftly chopped up the butter and put it into the flour in pieces.
"Let me try," I offered.
"No, you just mess it up. We all still remember what happened when you blanched the asparagus."
"Look, bleached and blanched sound very similar," I said through gritted teeth.
Tamsin shook her head.
"I just don't want to screw up our first cooking test, especially after Clara's group got such good marks yesterday. Go measure the currants. Mira, can you warm the cream instead?"
Mira slid the bowl of currants over, exchanging an amused glance with me. My roommates and I had also fallen into comfortable roles, not to mention a growing closeness. Despite Tamsin's initial proclamations, I ended up being looked to as the unofficial leader.
though we still usually let her dictate our actions. It was easier than going against her. We all wanted to succeed here, but her undisguised ambition and razor-sharp focus kept Mira and me working at a pace we might otherwise have missed. It was useful having her on my side, but her scrutiny made me nervous sometimes. She rarely missed anything. "How did you ever survive in your lady's home?" she asked, regarding her butter and flour with satisfaction. It wasn't the first time I'd been asked that question. Along with being the unofficial leader, I suspected I also served as regular entertainment for them, thanks to both my wit and my mishaps. I shrugged. "I never had to cook. There were others to do that." That wasn't a lie. Ada might have had to cook growing up in her mother's household, but she'd never had to in mine. I sewed and mended, dressed my lady, styled her hair. Both Mira and Tamsin raised an eyebrow at that. They'd seen my hair efforts. I successfully deflected from that when I saw Tamsin take out a ceramic platter for plating our pastry. "No, use glass," I told her. "Why the hell why would we do that?" Tamsin had made a lot of progress in her word choice this last month, but still often slipped. "It's how they're serving it now. On glass, decorated with sugar and extra currants." I might struggle with commonplace activities, but I knew these small, luxurious details, things our instructors often hadn't gotten around to yet in our education. It was like the chemises. I saw Tamsin's eyes narrow, immediately filing this away. It was why she often looked past my other inadequacies, both real and contrived. These small things gave us an edge, and it was proven later when the cooking instructor came by to survey our work. "This is lovely," she said, studying the artful swirls of sugar on the glass platter that I'd made. "None of the other girls have focused much on aesthetics, but they're just as important as the quality of the food. Visual appeal is a part of taste appeal, you know." We didn't see what she wrote down on her paper, but her pleased look spoke volumes. Tamsin could barely contain her smugness. "There'll be no living with her now," Mira told me when we walked to our dance lesson afterward. She nodded to where Tamsin was animatedly telling another girl about our excellent marks. "She's doing that for spite. She knows it'll get back to Clara." "You're saying Clara doesn't deserve a little spite?" Clara had continued to make life difficult for Mira, though she'd backed off a bit when she realized taking on Mira meant also taking on Tamsin and me. "I'm just saying that we don't need to further petty rivalries when there's already so much evil in the world we need to stop." She might not have Tamsin's frenetic energy, but Mira was an ally, and a friend I'd long come to appreciate. There was a calmness and strength to her that soothed me, and even neurotic Tamsin. Mira was the rock we could both lean on. She gave the impression that the politics and drama in the house were of no concern to her, after witnessing the ravages of war and subsequent hardships of the Seminican ghetto in Osfrid. Her comment about the world's evils was a rare allusion to her past, but I didn't push her when she didn't elaborate. Instead, I linked my arm through hers as we entered the ballroom. "You should have been a nun with that kind of diplomatic attitude. Hide away in some cloister and meditate." "You can fight evil with meditation," she replied. I wouldn't have been surprised if she was quoting from one of her most prized possessions, an old book of heroic tales smuggled out of Seminica. A dance mistress rotated among the different manors each week, and here was an area in which I had to consciously dumb down my abilities. I'd had formal dance lessons since childhood. The other girls had never had any, and most still struggled after only a month. It was one of those areas Cedric had warned I'd stand out in, so I was overly cautious about not attracting Miss Hayworth's attention, to the point where I almost seemed hopelessly inept. "Adelaide," she said wearily, "are you dancing the gentleman's part?" We were in the middle of a complicated line progression, in which it was common for us to alternate standing in for the opposite gender. "Yes, ma'am," I said. "I thought we were supposed to take turns doing that." She threw up her hands. "Yes, but it's your turn to dance the lady's part. The part you'll be doing in Adoria. You're trampling all over poor Sylvia's feet." "Oh, that explains it." I gave her a sunny smile, and she moved on. Cedric might be able to sell salvation to a priest, but I could make my instructors find me endearing despite my frustrating progress. We did a few more rounds, and then paused for one of Miss Hayworth's infamous pop quizzes. I promptly snapped to attention. These were not anything to slack on, as those who performed badly were often put on clean-up duty. Caroline, how many passes in a Lorandian two-step loop? Caroline, Clara's chief sidekick,